This has always been one of my favorite Disney songs.
You think you own whatever land you land on.
The wildly descriptive lyrics of Colors of the Wind evoke imagery that allows the imagination to soar.
But I know every rock and tree and creature.
Pocahontas was, after all, describing the land on which I was raised, but she, or rather the songwriter, made it sound so exotic. And what was this business about the blue corn moon? That line always stood out to me, but I only recently became curious enough to investigate the origins of that phrase. My research revealed a bit of your garden variety, Disney-esque fantasy making, but along with that came a troubling trek into America's fraught history with Native American culture and folklore. The inspiration for Colors of the Wind largely came from a speech that was thought to have been given by a famous Native American chief, a speech that inspired millions of environmentalists and naturalists to take better care of the earth, a noble aspiration, to be sure, but like a lot of things rooted in American myth-making, the origin of that speech and the source of the song's most famous line,
"Have you ever heard the wolf cry to the blue corn moon?"
Much like the story of Pocahontas herself, turned out to be almost entirely made up. I'm Dara Starr Tucker, and this is The Breakdown. In the 1990s, Disney Animation Studios was on a winning streak. They couldn't miss The Little Mermaid in 89, Beauty and the Beast in 91, Aladdin in 92, and The Lion King in 94. Ordinarily, when a new animation feature finally made it to home video, we get a preview of what was to come in the form of a trailer. When The Lion King was released, they switched it up a bit. All we got was a song.
Can you paint with all the colors of the wind?
A glorious song. A song decrying the exploitation of native lands and the blatant disregard for nature that European colonizers often exhibited. Disney was clearly moving into their conscious era. There was a period from 1989 to 1999 that Disney has built its own folklore around, often called the Disney Renaissance, that we all remember fondly. Disney had at one time been the only real game in town where big budget animation was concerned. But the deaths of Walt and Roy Disney in the late 60s and early 70s left Walt Disney Productions with a bit of an identity crisis, and the studio went through an almost 20-year period of lagging box office receipts and increased competition from burgeoning animation studios. So when they finally got back to producing hits, starting with 1989's The Little Mermaid, they came back with a renewed vision for what Disney Animation Studios would represent in its Renaissance era. It wasn't lost on anyone that the original golden age of Disney animated films had been exceedingly white. That wasn't unusual for the era, but the glaring instances of cultural insensitivity and even blatant racism.
But I'll be done seeing about everything.
We're becoming more and more apparent to audiences as times changed.
We are Siamese, if you please.
Executives at Disney soon realized that it would be necessary for them to refurbish the studio's image, not only in terms of the quality of the content that they were offering, but by telling more diverse stories. They would accomplish this by reaching outside of the exclusive Eurocentric universes of their previous offerings and drawing on rich cultural legacies from around the world. Now, Disney being willing to tell stories outside of the European tradition didn't automatically mean that cultural sensitivity was their new stock in trade. Recent live-action remakes of those animated classics have made an attempt to rectify many of the missteps that the studio was still making by the early 90s.
It's barbaric, but hey, it's home.
Yikes.
It's chaotic, but hey, it's home.
But they were putting forth a real effort to make sure that children of every hue saw themselves represented in their films. Well, unless you were a little black child, in which case you'd have to be satisfied with being represented by a lion, voiced by this child, or a monkey. Until this film. Yes, they finally got it right. Well, yeah, she does spend the majority of the film looking like this. But hey, look, they fixed it with this guy, right? Wait, no, he's a disembodied spirit now? Okay, all right, okay, let's just focus on the story at hand. Now, by this point, most people are aware that the Disney version of the Pocahontas story is mostly fiction. Pocahontas would have been about 10 or 11 years old when John Smith came to the Americas, so there was certainly no inkling of a romance between the two. What's not as well known is the equally problematic nature of the film's most famous song. On its surface, it purports to contrast the opposing ways in which the natives and the colonizers viewed their land, But the lyrics themselves point to an all too familiar history of exploitation, cultural appropriation, and romanticizing of Native folklore that on one hand feels complimentary, but in reality just further serves to co-opt Native stories and cultural agency. When the song reaches its emotional height, you're fully locked in. This is a Native American woman, Pocahontas, schooling this colonizer, John Smith, about his treatment of the land that his people have co-opted, a land that she loves. This was Disney confronting white imperialism and Native land theft. This was uncharted territory for them. Since most people had the VHS of The Lion King on repeat for months, most of us had Colors of the Wind memorized by the time the Pocahontas film opened in theaters in 1995. Colors of the Wind was composed by Alan Menken with lyrics by Stephen Schwartz. This was Stephen Schwartz's first time writing lyrics for a Disney film, and he hit it out of the park. Disney clearly knew that this song would be the film's biggest selling point. Composer Alan Menken had worked on most of the Disney Renaissance films, The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin, but lyricist Stephen Schwartz was a Broadway guy who was best known for shows like Pippin and Godspell. Day by day. After the storyboarding took place, the composition of Colors of the Wind was really the first substantive thing that was done on Pocahontas. Disney execs felt that the song was so strong that the rest of the film was built around it. And they weren't wrong to put that kind of faith in the song. It ended up winning the Academy Award for Best Song.
From Pocahontas, Colors of the Wind.
Music by Alan Menken. And the lyric by Stephen Schwartz.
And it was a huge pop hit for Vanessa Williams.
Think you own whatever land you land on. The earth is just a dead thing you can claim.
But in the years preceding the film's release, important questions were starting to be raised about a speech that the song's lyricist, Stephen Schwartz, referred to as the main source of inspiration for the song's lyrical content.
And I want to acknowledge my personal debt to the Native American poets and wisdom keepers who inspired my work on this project, most particularly in the case of this song, Chief Seattle. Thank you very much.
In a 2010 interview, Stephen Schwartz described the painstaking process that he went through to ensure that the songs in Pocahontas were reflective of the culture of the Powhatan people on which the film was based. He and members of the Pocahontas team went to Jamestown and they spent time with Native tribes. He describes listening to Algonquin music and reading Native American poetry, as well as immersing himself in narratives on the life of Pocahontas and the Algonquin people. He did his homework. The problem was that the primary source of inspiration on which many of the lyrics of Colors of the Wind are based was completely fabricated. The lyrics are meant to confront the Eurocentrism of John Smith and the other colonists and present a counter-narrative rooted in indigenous principles of animism and respect for nature. The lyrics draw heavily from a speech that was thought to have been given by a famous Native leader named Chief Seattle. Chief Seattle was an accommodationist who signed over millions of acres of land to white settlers, and he made a speech in the 1850s about how the land was to be treated, that ended up being translated multiple times, after which it was embellished, altered, and modified by multiple white people for various purposes. At one point, the Southern Baptist Radio and Television Commission even added a section where Chief Seattle refers to himself as a savage who doesn't understand the modern world. And this completely fabricated version of Chief Seattle's speech was co-opted by the growing environmentalist movement of the 1970s. So as it turns out, this inspirational speech, supposedly made by an indigenous chief, was really just a representation of the mythological noble savage trope that white settlers had been peddling since they landed on U.S. shores. Finally, in the 80s and 90s, academics and historians started to question how much truth there was to the speech. And slowly but surely, it was revealed that very little of Chief Seattle's speech had survived all those reworkings and misinterpretations. But when Stephen Schwartz was writing Colors of the Wind in the early 90s, he wasn't really aware of any of that. And as for the line about the blue corn moon, well, that's mostly made up too. Schwartz says that while he was researching Native literature and poetry, he came up on a line that read, "I will come to you in the moon of green corn," and he thought it was a beautiful sentiment. When he got ready to incorporate that line into the song, he just didn't think green corn moon rolled off the tongue very well, so he thought about how closely blue corn is associated with Native culture, although he acknowledges that it has nothing to do with Natives from the Algonquin region where Pocahontas would have lived. And he thought about the idea of the blue moon, so he substituted green with blue, and thus was born the blue corn moon. Now, incidentally, the green corn moon just describes the full moon in August, and a blue moon is the fourth full moon in a three-moon season, or the second full moon in a single month. So I guess technically, if you had a second full moon in the month of August, you would have a green blue corn moon, right? But none of this takes away from the beauty or the message of the song, of course. Despite all of the problematic historical elements in the song's backstory and the film itself, the song delivers an important message about respect for the earth and its inhabitants. And considering Disney's record on racial insensitivity, despite its flaws, Colors of the Wind represented a significant step forward for a studio that has yet to fully grapple with its troubled past.
Have you ever heard the wolf cry to the blue corn moon?